Welcome to the third Juneteenth episode on More Than That. We're back to uncover the hidden history of Juneteenth with Sam Collins III. But first, we want to thank Procter & Gamble's Widen the Screen program and My Black is Beautiful hair care line for sponsoring this episode. Learn more about how they're impacting our communities to make them better now and for generations to come at pg.com/equality and inclusion. As we know, June 19th, 1865 is a symbol of emancipation for many of us whose families were enslaved. But there are still so many pieces leading up to the day that are unknown or simply misunderstood. This episode is different from our others, as our team did a historical deep dive into the Library of Congress archives, read through 19th century newspapers, and listened to oral history, like this next clip, which may be hard to hear.
My name is Fountain Hughes. We were slaves. We belonged to people. They sell us like you sell horses and cows. And hog and all like that, have an auction bench, and they put you on a, up on the bench and beat on you, the same as you're bidding on cattle, you know.
So we're talking with Professor Juneteenth, also known as historian Sam Collins III, co-chair of the Juneteenth Legacy Project and a Galveston Historical Foundation board member. He's joining us from the Nea Cultural Center in Galveston, Texas, literally at the intersection of where Juneteenth first began, to take us back to the unexplored moments leading up to the day. Thank you so much for being here, Sam Collins. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Thank you for the invitation. I always love talking about Galveston history and Texas history and American history, really world history. So I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yes, come on in here. We were talking about how Juneteenth really came into the public view during the 2020 civil rights, Black Lives Matter movement. A lot of people in the country, it was their first time hearing about it. How did you become so passionate about Juneteenth in particular?
Well, Juneteenth, of course, here in Texas, it's always been important. The former enslaved individuals and their descendants kept that oral history alive. Mm-hmm. So I trace my family roots here in Galveston back to 1925, earliest documented history. And then I'm a seventh generation Texan. So I trace my family lineage back to 1837.
Wow.
To think back when I was more kind of conscious of what the holiday meant was probably the early 80s. Before that, we were just having a good time with your friends. You don't really know the meaning of the holiday and until you get a little bit older and you, oh, this is why we celebrate. This is why we listen to the stories of the elders that talk about why this day is so important.
Yeah.
The prayers of the grandmothers and grandfathers and the children and the families.
Talk about it.
You know, the strength of the DNA of their survival. We have real heroes and real people from real places in our family, our grandparents, great-grandparents, our parents, our uncles, aunts. They have superpowers in their DNA, and we draw strength from that superpower of their very existence.
Set the scene for our listeners about what Galveston looked like leading up to the Civil War and about what it might have felt like for that first Juneteenth.
When you just look at Texas, Galveston is like this off the coast. It's just an island, a little strip island, 31 miles long. You don't grow anything in Galveston. Sometimes when people hear the story, they think all these people were kind of gathered in Galveston, but there were only a little over 1,000 enslaved people on the island in 1865. But Galveston was the largest port with relation to enslaved people coming into the state of Texas. They had auction houses, slave quarters, and as individuals would come into the city, they then would be moved because most of the people are not working on the island. They're working on the plantations further inland, where there were over 250,000, some estimate as high as 300,000 enslaved people in the state of Texas. You have people coming in from all around the world. So you have interactions between the enslaved people that were enslaved people in Galveston that did know how to read. These were individuals that worked in the homes of these enslavers and rich business owners, but it still was slavery, right?
Right.
The largest enslaver ran all the business from Galveston. He owned 7 plantations and 850 people, Robert Mills and his brother David Mills. So when you think about what they considered their wealth, not only did they own the people, but oftentimes they owned the mortgages against other plantation sites and against the human beings.
Whew.
So there's 3 different ways they're making money off these people. You're going to have some babies. I'm going to take out a loan against you, and then I'm going to use your labor. And people say, well, why didn't they all just run away? Well, if I'm strong enough to run away, but I'm going to leave my wife and 4 children, I'm not going to leave them.
Right.
We got people talking about they would have ran away from slavery that won't even file a complaint with the HR department on their job.
Talk about it.
This is America's struggle with what do we do with this history and this knowledge. It's very complicated.
Shreveport Semi-Weekly News, January 7, 1962. Their government has laid heavy taxes upon you to carry on this unnatural war, one object of which is openly avowed to be set at liberty your slaves and the ensuing steps in which will be put to arms in their hands and give them political and social equality with yourselves.
One of the myths about the news coming into Texas is that the news was late. Well, the news was not late, so we need to stop saying that the news was late.
Mm.
Lincoln signs the Emancipation Proclamation September 22nd, 1862, to go into effect January 1st, 1863. Researcher DJ Norman Cox, he has a book called Juneteenth 101. He's identified at least 125 newspapers that mention the Emancipation Proclamation between the fall of 1862 and December of 1864.
Whoa.
And of course, some of these enslaved people knew how to read. A lot of times they were ear hustling.
Yes.
To listen to the conversation. So even though those making plans were ignoring the people working in the homes, the enslaved people knew the war was going on, and if the Union won, that freedom would come. Those individuals were collecting important intel that they may have been sharing with other individuals that were working on the docks. So the oral histories and information was being shared.
The Texas Republican, August 9th, 1862. Mr. Lincoln urges them that if his views are not adopted, and quickly, the people of the border states will find their Negroes set free by the course of the revolution.
Could that mean there's a path to freedom?
Maybe.
You think it's true? We've been set free?
I hope so.
So, in the fall of 1862, Galveston is under Union control, just the island, not the whole state of Texas, but the port city. And then they have a battle of Galveston. The Confederate Army retakes control of the island, therefore delaying freedom in this area.
Dallas Herald, April 8, 1863. Galveston has been rendered impregnable by Confederate engineers. The enemy's Union flag will never again wave over our island city.
The reason the Juneteenth story becomes so important is that Texas was the last Confederate state to surrender and come back in.
Our story is still being written. our past pieced together over time, gradually filling in the gaps of our history. Juneteenth is one of those days riddled with misinformation. The more we learn, the more we can get ready for what's next, the future that's ours to make, where equality represents something more than what our ancestors knew to unite us as a people and a country. My Black is Beautiful honors our past, present, and future by empowering Black women along their journey to achieve beauty on their terms. Learn more about what they're doing at mbib.com.
So there's a Civil War kind of narrative about the soldiers and the fight for freedom in 1862. There is this opportunity for former enslaved individuals and free Blacks to also join the United States Colored Troops, the USCT. And it was the USCT and the soldiers that came in that not only brought their physical presence to the battle, but they brought their intel. And what I mean by that is they knew Southern territories and areas like, okay, this creek runs this way. This plantation is located here. So they had intel that they could share with Union officers to say, hey, the way to get behind them is instead of going straight into the battle, let's go over this hill, let's go around this river down about 2 miles, 5 miles, and then we could come up and around. Things like that is pivotal to getting a victory in the battle because the Southern Army underestimated the intellect of those enslaved people. And then in addition to that, if my wife and children are behind enemy lines, I don't expect anybody to fight as hard for them as I was fighting. Like, that's my family, my children. I'm going into that battle to go get them.
Dear wife, I have enlisted in the army. I would like to know if you are still in slavery. Great is the outpouring of the colored people that is now rallying with the hearts of lions against the very curse that has separated you and me. I am a soldier now, and I shall use my utmost endeavor to strike at the rebellion and the heart of this system that so long has kept us in chains. I remain your own affectionate husband until death. Private Samuel Cable to his wife, Leah, June, 1863.
Now let's get into General Granger and that story. We hear a lot about that version, but how is the story romanticized and where did that white savior narrative really begin?
Gordon Granger gets a lot of the credit because he was the officer in charge, but there were thousands of soldiers, 75% of the Union forces in Texas at that point were USCT. So Appomattox, Lee surrenders on April 9th, 1865, and that's supposed to be the end of the war. But you still have areas that refuse to surrender or free their enslaved people. So this saying that you're not my president, it didn't just start recently. So it wasn't just a piece of paper that freed the enslaved people. It was what a friend of my grandmother says, her grandfather told her, it was the men with the guns. So it was the soldiers that showed up to make sure that this freedom was enforced.
What do you imagine it sounded like on June 19th, 1865 in Galveston, Texas?
So that Monday morning, there's a celebration and an exuberance of, is it real? I imagine individuals went to bed on Sunday night praying that we'll finally get this announcement. We're free. And the soldiers are saying, hey, look, he doesn't own you anymore. And I believe that these USCT were ecstatic to bring this message to these former enslaved people.
General Order Number 3. The people are informed that in accordance with a proclamation from the executive of the United States, all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former master and slave, and the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between employer and hired labor.
The freed are advised to remain at their present homes and work for wages. They are informed that they will not be allowed to collect at military posts and that they will not be supported in idleness either there or elsewhere. Idleness.
Granger did not write General Order Number 3. The first sentence ends with all slaves are free, but the second sentence begins with this involves an absolute equality. So at that point, those enslaved people hearing those words believed that absolute equality is what they were going to receive. Our prayers are finally being answered. It's not the freedom that we like to think, that all of a sudden freedom came, everybody just dropped their tools and took off walking and going in different directions. It was very complicated. That's not the story for everyone. There were individuals that left the plantation sites and went to new communities. But if you don't have money, if you don't have a wagon, if you don't own a mule and a horse, where do you pick up and go? And when you get there, if you don't own the land or don't have credit to buy land, you have to have individuals willing to sell land to you. So this is all part of the story, and we need to tell those stories and be proud of those stories.
Yes.
So it's not a lack of our ancestors trying and advocating for a more equitable society. It's just that there was always a resistance to sharing that power and sharing the resources.
How do you personally define absolute equality? What does that mean to you?
Absolute equality is giving every human being an equal opportunity to develop and grow into the very best version of him or herself without hurdles or barriers hindering their growth or development. So that's the battle that we continue to fight for, to make sure that we have equal representation and that we have a voice, not only at the table, but all throughout our community, everywhere we go.
Thank you so much, Mr. Collins. You have been incredible. Now that you have talked to me about the past, what do you envision for how Juneteenth should be celebrated and honored in the future?
Well, as we do the work to repair the narrative of our shared American history, Texas history, and world history, it is important that we use these platforms. When you're having these celebrations, it's not just about partying and listening to music. Have something that feeds our mind and spirit that will help us to become better human beings.
I love that.
We can help every individual become the very best version of themselves so that we have better families, we have better neighborhoods,
yes,
and hopefully a better world.
The idea of bridging the gap to the future is so powerful. Though Juneteenth is a day of celebration, it's important that we acknowledge the sacrifices of the United States colored troops and the parts of the story that really aren't told. Like our guest Sam Collins said, this day reminds us of the superpowers in our DNA. As we learned in this story, there is no white savior. We have always and will continue to save ourselves. We also must share these stories, never forgetting the pieces of our history that bring us closer to that equality and freedom we deserve. Thank you to our team and to Professor Juneteenth for connecting the dots from the past to the present, opening our eyes to Juneteenth's unknown history, and for honoring the resounding resilience of our people. Thank you so much to Sam Collins III for guiding us and to Procter & Gamble's Widen the Screen program and My Black is Beautiful hair care line for sponsoring our Juneteenth special. Head to pg.com/equality and inclusion to learn how they're continuing their commitment to creating positive impact for lasting change.